Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's new book, Paperboy. To order today, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on store.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and the Spectator.
Especially Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Everyone, and welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. It is Wednesday. Thank you so much for tuning in. A lot of people, by the way, asking about Howie Carr, the captain, and very concerned about his whereabouts the last 2 days. He is back today. He just took a couple days off. Everything's fine. He's going to be back at 3 o'clock. Do not pay the ransom. We are all good. And you can look forward to his show, which I know is going to be excellent later today. Toby did a fabulous job filling in, by the way, and we really loved having him here in studio. So thank you to Toby Leary as well. Now, we have a busy day. You know what I'm in, Jared? And you know this. I go through waves. I'm in a guest phase. There's some waves of this show where Jared, it will just be Jared and I talking, you know what, for hours on end. And there'll be no guests at all. But I think because of how complicated some of these trials are and just how much news there is going on, I want to bring in a lot of people who have some details that otherwise we might not be able to go over. So today I have David Marcus, my go-to on all things 2024 polls, New York politics specifically. We got Neil McCabe. It's been a long time since Neil McCabe has been on the show. And he's going to join us to discuss the Fisher versus United States case, which has to do with the J6 defendants and this statute on obstruction. We've got some great sound from Gorsuch on this. He brought up the one, the only, the fire alarm renegade, Jamal Bowman. He brought that up during the oral arguments today, and the sound is beautiful. And he just points out what everyone's thinking, like what makes an insurrection? Is it the MAGA hat? Is it, do you have to be over 70 years old with a Trump flag around your shoulders, looking like you're going to the slots in Vegas? Is that the only way? Is that the only thing that rises to an insurrection? What does an insurrection make? And he brought up Jamal Bowman, not by name, but I don't think there's a lot of people in Congress who are known for trying to open a door, wink, wink, by pulling a fire alarm. So we will get to that. And what I think is even more interesting to my listeners, because you can get a lot of that stuff about Fisher versus the United States and how the Supreme Court is dealing with this, how you think they might rule, etc. But that's not probably going to happen until the summertime, and there's plenty of stuff out there for that. But what Neil McCabe wrote today in Red State, I think is going to blow up, because he wrote a piece about the Army whistleblower who is discussing what really happened with the National Guard delay on January 6th, which has been, maybe it's because it's the most basic question, at least in my mind, and it seems like something that would be easy to sort out. I feel the same way, Jared, about the Afghanistan withdrawal, where there's military experts who say, well, we told Biden all of these issues if he decided to withdraw from Afghanistan. And then meanwhile, you had the Biden administration being like, no, he didn't get any of that information, or he made his decision on his own, or, you know, it's just two different stories. And it seems as though it would be very easy to figure out what went wrong if you actually did an examination of the process of that withdrawal. But of course, you know, there has to be a will. Nobody wants to find out what went wrong, so we'll never know. And I feel the same way about January 6th. I always surprise people when they say, oh, when Trump becomes president again, is there any investigations that you'd want to happen? Because now we have control of the House and there's the Hunter Biden investigations. And, you know, there's some good things going on, thanks to Jim Jordan and others, James Comer, for example. But I always say, I'd want another J6 commission. Not featuring Liz Cheney, not featuring Adam Kinzinger. I'd want a real one. I want a bipartisan look into what actually happened that day, because there are so many things we don't know. And I don't consider that show trial, circus, kangaroo court, to have been helpful in any way whatsoever. It left me with, honest to God, it left me with more questions than answers. And so I don't talk about January 6th all the time, because I feel like people do have fatigue. But I would talk about it if there was new information, if it wasn't just Jerry Nadler lecturing me on saving democracy, or Joe Biden going, the MAGA people underwear, the MAGA, and they beating over the head with a fire extinguisher. Then I would talk about it. If we had some new nuggets of information, which I think Neil McCabe does have, and that's why we're going to talk about all of that with him. Plus, if time permits, and if court is not in session, I'm hoping we're going to get Turtle Boy on to talk about Karen Reed. Karen Reed, by the way, the juror selection in Karen Reed's case is going on currently. I think yesterday they were able to select four jurors, which really is not a lot for a full day, I don't think, in court. And I don't pretend to know all about this. I don't follow these things all the time. But I just think there were so many people, based off of what I read in the New York Post, of all places, they've started covering it a little bit more. They must realize that, you know, it drives clicks. A lot of the people that were part of the jury selection already had feelings on the case one way or the other. And they couldn't hide it. They wouldn't hide it during the voir dire. They just were very open about the fact that they knew a lot about this. So that kind of got me thinking, Jared, which is going to be our poll question. Who has a harder time getting an impartial jury right now, Karen Reed or Donald Trump? I think, believe it or not, I think I can make the case for Karen Reed. Now, seven jurors, we'll talk about that during the poll question, but seven jurors have been selected thus far on the hush money trial in New York City. And we've gotten some of the descriptions. Have you seen these descriptions, Jared? The list of jurors?
For Donald Trump, yes, I have.
Yeah, there's been seven people, and they can give you like a general description for the public. And
not many of them get their news from Fox, is all I'm going to say.
No, you know what, Jared? I actually think that for New York City, this group is about as neutral a group as you're going to get. And no, let me rephrase that. No. I shouldn't say neutral. That's not an accurate description of what I'm trying to say. I would say it is as mixed of a bag of people, of potential right and left voters, as possible for New York City. Because you have to keep that in mind. And I'm sure, and I asked Mark Salinas this today, because I was wondering about voir dire. Like, you go through, you can ask certain questions. We've talked a lot about this, what questions they're allowed to ask. You know, have you liked anything on social media of Donald Trump's, things of that nature. And I texted Mark Salinas today, my go-to for all legal questions. And I said, Mark, because you read the list of jurors, and there's like a Disney employee, there's people that you definitely think to yourself. They're leaning left. And I texted Mark Salinas and I said, how many vetoes do you get on voir dire? Like, how many vetoes during jury selection can a lawyer have? And then I followed it up by saying, I'm sure veto is not the correct word in this case. And Mark told me, he said, you can challenge as many jurors as you want. And if the judge agrees with you, they bounce them. They're off the case. They can't be part of the jury. I thought there was a set number, Jared. Like, I thought you could have three or four complaints. And so you had to use them wisely. Like, if you use them too quick, it's like timeouts. If you use them too quick, then you might end up regretting it later on. Like, oh, I thought juror number one was going to be the worst, so I vetoed him. Turns out he would have been way better than juror number eight, who now I'm stuck with. But no, it's not like that. You can question, but then it becomes, they could be questioning these jurors all day long for the next million years. Because you're never really going to know if someone can be impartial. And one thing I will say is there was a mix of people. There was an oncology nurse, a guy from North Carolina, people who read the New York Post, Jared. Yeah, there was a couple people who say they read the New York Times. But I like the fact that there's people in there who read the New York Post. They all seemed like sane picks to me.
One of them was noted as being formerly from Ireland.
Yes.
I don't know what that...
I like that, though.
I don't know what that means, but...
I know that you really... You can't... There's no way to know. I've learned that over the years, too. Sometimes somebody will come up to me, and in my mind, I think, oh, this person's big liberal, whatever, and then this person will say to me, go Trump. Like, you really don't know. You cannot judge books based off their cover. But I would say, with all that being said, if we're going to judge books on their cover, I would think the guy formerly from Ireland, or originally from Ireland, I would think that works in Trump's favor.
Ireland man.
Don't you think? I would think that he...
More than likely.
More than likely, that's a good pick for Donald Trump. And like I said, they all seem like sane people who have jobs. You know, they're not professional activists. And the other part of this, Jared, that kind of comes up, and we'll talk about this as we go into the hour, because it is, in my mind, the lead story. You never know what to expect when it comes to Trump. Like, he's definitely a lightning rod, but he does manage to have a very diverse, eclectic group of supporters, and people surprise you, and you can't base it off of somebody's job. You can't, you know, I've had people call up my show who work at Harvard, and they say, Grace, I listen to your show all the time. Thanks so much for, you know, talking about the anti-Semitism. And if I judge that person based off their LinkedIn, I would think that they would hate me in my politics. So you really just don't know. But one thing I would say is, to that point, yesterday Trump stopped at a bodega, or as we like to call it here, because we are students of Dr. B.
The bodegas.
He stopped at a bodega in Harlem, and he was greeted by cheers, a gaggle of excited voters. He was meeting with the owner of Blue Moon Convenience Store. Quick refresher for people, 2 years ago, a clerk, he's not the owner of the store, he was a clerk working at the store, he was defending himself against an ex-con who was trying to steal a bag of chips, and he stabbed his attacker in self-defense, and he killed him, and the clerk was arrested, and he was eventually released. There was like a lot of public outcry because it was ridiculous. He was eventually released, and then he just decided, like, I'm out of here. He moved to the Dominican Republic. But Trump stopped at this bodega yesterday because he's been receiving all this support from bodegas around the country. And he stopped there, and he was meeting with the owner. And I will, and really, that story is just emblematic of so many issues in these blue cities. And Democrat policies run amok. You guys know exactly what I'm talking about. The woke DAs. The lack of interest from these DAs of going after anyone who's actually committing crimes, and they prefer to target ordinary citizens, or in some cases, former presidents. So Trump goes there. And this got me thinking. First, I saw this, and I hate to be dramatic. No, I don't. I love to be dramatic. But I did see this, Jared, and I thought, that visual of Trump being met by all of these voters in Harlem, cheering his name 4 more years. I thought that's the stuff that changes elections.
And it should be noted, there were not a ton, it was not a sea of, let's say, white supremacists in that crowd.
No.
It was a very diverse, non-traditional Republican voting base crowd.
Well, you can be a black white supremacist, I've been told.
That's right. I forgot about Larry Elder.
But
Los Angeles Times.
But your point stands. Yeah, it was a very diverse crowd. And you know, yesterday I talked a little bit with Emma about how when Trump is outside the courthouse, not when he's outside like in a planned thing with the podium, when he's right in that hallway, in that corridor between the outside of the courthouse and the actual outside where the paparazzi and the reporters are, there's something about those moments when he's talking to the press that are really captivating. Like, he talks to them and he'll turn his back in a 180. And there's something about that when he's on TV, it draws your eye to it. And I would say between that and then using the time he's in New York City to stop in Harlem to make the most out of these trips to New York, if I were Joe Biden, I'd be nervous right now because he's hitting on all of these things that Joe Biden can't do. And that's exactly what he should be doing. Who's ever running this team, and I should give kudos to Caroline Levick, she's part of it. They're doing a really great job this time around with maximizing every single hit he has, whether it's Chick-fil-A, whether it's a bodega or a bogada, either one, they're making the most of these hits. They're making them go viral. They're creating a visual that is very, very powerful for someone who's running for president, and especially when you compare it with the actual president and what he's up to, which we will get to at some point today. 844-500-4242. We'll be right back. We'll take your calls. Don't go anywhere.
Hi, it's Toby from Cape Gunworks. I'm taking all your firearm and self-defense questions every Tuesday. Join Grace and me for 2A Tuesday, Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
This is the Grace Curley Show.
Oberman is seeing that video and just screaming, no, make it stop. This can't be. I would love to see Nicole Wallace. I would love to see just a live viewing of that, of Nicole Wallace, Bill Kristol, Keith Olbermann, Joe Scarborough, everybody watching these viral moments, whether it's Trump at the Chick-fil-A or Trump in Harlem or just, you know, Trump at the courthouse. I don't think the left is liking this. And you know what? You did it to yourselves. You made this guy a martyr. You made it so he has to go to all these trials all over the country. And you're rallying people around him everywhere he goes. Today's poll question is brought to you by FlipLock. You may already have a home surveillance system, but what's going to physically stop an intruder from breaking down your door? The original FlipLock is the answer. Get yours now for 50% off the regular price at gracecurlyshow.com and click store. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is who will have a harder time getting a fair jury, Donald Trump or Karen Reed?
You know, based off what I was reading in the New York Post today about Karen Reed's jury selection, I'm going to say Reed, actually.
Only 16% think it'll be Karen Reed. 84% think Donald Trump.
And I don't necessarily think that the jurors they're going to select in the Karen Reed case are going to be against her. Like, it actually might be in her favor. I just don't think they're going to be impartial. I think this story that is out of Canton has managed to take hold of Massachusetts. It's all over the papers here, as it should be, finally. And I think a lot of these jurors, that they know what's going on. And I don't know where they stand on it, but I don't think you're going to get anybody who's got an open mind at this point. Lisa, you're up next on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hey, Grace. I'm not too steeped in Massachusetts politics, but I think Karen Reed may get a better time because of this. Massachusetts people are so weary and so disgusted with the corruption, either the state police or the FBI during the Whitey stuff, or the bottles of Fiji and the snowblowers and the paved driveways, that they may do an OJ. They may just try to get back at the cops for all of their misdeeds over the years. And so that could be a thing. But
yeah, but you know what? The crazy thing, the reason I would disagree with that is because OJ, it was so obvious that he did it. In this case with Karen Reed, I truly don't think that's the case. So I don't know if he'd be getting back at the cops or just doing what they think is right. We'll be right back.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Can we get a picture?
Yeah, Trump made a quick pit stop after his court appearance yesterday, and to say he made the most of it is an understatement. He was met with several, as Jared pointed out, these aren't white supremacists. These were several Trump supporters in Harlem. He met with the bodega owner there, whose store clerk 2 years ago was arrested for self-defense after going after stabbing an ex-con who was trying to steal a bag of chips.
The bodega.
The cops were there. That was the cut you just heard, the cops asking for photos. And you know what's so weird is that Joe Biden recently put out a statement saying that he was the president for cops. Like, the cops were backing him, even though he doesn't go to cops' funerals when they're murdered in cold blood due to Democrat policies and ideology. And even though I don't see any videos of cops in Harlem asking Joe Biden, I've never seen a video of anyone asking Joe Biden for a photo. I think maybe once Amy Klobuchar asked for a selfie and it went viral because it was so uncomfortable. But I've never seen a group of people asking Joe Biden for a photo. I've seen Joe Biden asking people for photos and then parlaying that into sniffing people's hair. But I've never seen it the other way around. Now, something I want to mention here about the Bogotas, as Dr. Jill.
The Bogotas.
Once famously called them. She'll never live that down. You know, Dr. Jill, there's certain things, Jared, that it's not like it's the worst thing in the world, you know, to mispronounce something. Let me assure you all, I've made that mistake myself before. But there are some things that are so funny and so crazy that they're just always going to stick with you. And I only bring this up because when it came to the J6 case that's being heard in front of the Supreme Court, Jeffrey Toobin put out a tweet about it, being like, Clarence Thomas is sitting on the court and his wife, you know the whole narrative they're trying to push, his wife is pushing this conspiracy and this is a disgrace. And I'm just sitting here going, Toobin, for the love of God, you have lost the right to lecture me on what counts as a disgrace. You got kicked.
Damn! Jeffrey Toobin?
You lost your job at CNN because you were masturbating on a Zoom call. That's when you lose your condescension card. That's when you officially no longer can lecture me on what is or is not a disgrace. I don't think that's the craziest thing. It's also like another example, Jared. This restaurant owner, he's kind of a wackadoo. He was going after, I think he's the same guy who went after James Corden. He's going after Jeff Bezos' girlfriend. He said something really nasty about her, that she was ugly or something really mean, and something I don't condone. I don't like that. But Chrissy Teigen, of all people, starts telling him, like, be nice. You know, this isn't nice. You shouldn't bully people online. This is the woman who was at one point trolling a girl, telling her to take a dirt nap, like bullying her, wanting her to kill herself. I just, the people in the current culture.
I don't understand how someone can have so little self-awareness.
And you know what, you could go back to the Katie Couric of it all. I'm not jealous of these people. I'm not resentful of their lives. I don't want what they have. I just want them to have a modicum of self-awareness and know that if you're going to be hypocrites, if you're not going to follow your own rules, have the decency once in a while to sit one out. The lack of self-awareness in this country right now it's a phenomenon. It needs to be studied. And can I give one more, Jared, since I'm on this rant already? We talked about this briefly yesterday. This journalist, Uri Berliner from NPR, writes this whole piece about NPR, how NPR is, you know, not very open to other views and that they've messed up on a bunch of stories. There was no mea culpas for the Hunter Biden story, the Russia hoax, COVID. They were wrong on everything. They think they're better than everybody else and that they can lecture people on what counts as real news. And he just basically wrote this autopsy of what's wrong with NPR. Crazy part is he still worked at NPR when he wrote it, which I didn't realize. So I came on that day and I said, you know, it kind of takes cojones to write a piece after the fact to rip your former company. And then the day after that, I came back and I said, I didn't realize he was still working there. That takes brass cojones is what I'd say. That really, you got to have some guts there to walk through the hallways with your old coworkers or your current coworkers and be like, hey, everybody, new Keurig pods, huh? Cool. What do we got? Is this cream in the fridge still good? Oh, you saw it, huh? You read it? Oh, did everybody read it? Okay, cool. So I like this guy immediately. And then NPR, in response to this piece, they suspend Berliner for 5 days without pay. So he writes a piece saying you guys don't like any sort of criticism or any sort of pushback or any ideas that aren't your own. And their response is, that's not true. By the way, you're suspended without pay. Do you see what you're doing? Do you see that you're proving his point? Is there nobody in NPR with, I'm just talking about like half a brain cell, who saw this coming and maybe said to the person whose bright idea this was, I'm guessing it was that Marr lady, Catherine Marr, who doesn't like the First Amendment. There was not one person, Jared, at that round table at NPR who said, you know what, guys, you know what I think the better move would be? Just let this blow over. You know, just give this a couple days. Don't respond. You can put out a statement, but don't do anything to this Berliner guy, because it's just going to add fuel to the fire, and it's going to add credence to what he said. So let's just let it die out. There's no one in any of these companies or any of these PR teams that ever tells the decision makers, don't do that. That's a terrible idea. You are pouring gasoline on this thing. They need somebody. They need somebody to just once in a while come in and go, hey guys, we're going to look like idiots. There's a better way to handle this problem. Anyway, though, back to the bodegas, because that was a long tangent.
Hopefully, the bodegas.
I don't know how I got there. I could try to sketch it out, but it would be like the Kardashian family tree. We would never know. So the bodega situation is that Trump goes to this bodega, and then the New York's Bodega and Small Business Association, the guy who runs that, okay, he comes out and he says that they don't endorse political candidates. This was his statement. He said he was grateful for Trump's support, both of small businesses and of law and order, but noted his group does not endorse political candidates as a rule. And then this is the other part of the quote. This store was where the fight against the liberal laws started, when they were charging Jose Alba with murder for defending himself. The fight against those liberals started here, he told the Post. In a statement, the organization said Trump's visit highlights just how much we have lost the way in New York and emphasized a hope that it would inspire stricter criminal laws. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, even though they don't endorse political candidates, saying that you hope his visit to a bodega in Harlem is going to inspire stricter criminal laws, it's like half a dozen. You know what I mean?
It's weird.
It's an endorsement.
It says here in the statement, you can't endorse President Trump, but endorse and President Trump are capitalized.
It's literally...
That's not what it looks like. I'm joking.
It looks like an endorsement.
That's basically the wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
I can't think of
we're
a better endorsement.
Him. Yeah.
Then being like, hey, we don't do political endorsements, but we're so happy he showed up. And we really hope his visit inspires things to get better. I wonder whose side you're on. Let's go to Thomas. You're next up on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Thomas.
Yeah, first off, I have to agree with you 100% that Jeffrey Toobin lost his finger wagging card after, I'm not even going to say what he did on video. It's disgusting. And if that were my father, I would disown him, okay? You just don't do that. And we know who the real Jeffrey Toobin is. He's a creep, all right? But I think the optics of Trump going to that bodega, and what I would love to see Trump do is come to Roxbury at the Roxbury Service Center, where they have 400 beds that service center used to take care of African Americans that needed help with either social services, finding a job, or whatever. And I guarantee you there would be black people in Roxbury cheering him on. There would be a crowd across the street of public employee union members screaming at him, calling a racist and all that. But no, you know, I think Trump will actually be more of a uniter, far more than Joe Biden has been as far as race relations.
Yeah, and I would agree with that just based off the recent polls. And you know, we did talk about this yesterday because there was a good piece in the Georgia Recorder talking about how people, that there's certain black voters who have ruled out Trump, but they're also looking for other options beyond Biden. And I know that that's not ideal for Republicans, and we should keep pushing and keep trying to expand the net. I'm sorry, expand the tent and get other voters to join us, whether it be younger voters or Hispanic voters or, you know, whatever it is, college educated voters. I know sometimes conservatives right now are having trouble with that. But what I would add is that, and I said this yesterday, Trump doesn't necessarily need people to not vote for Biden and vote for Trump. He just needs them to not vote for Biden. And that's what I think the Biden campaign is worried about. Because you can poo-poo this all day and say, oh, black voters, you know, they're just, that's just a handful of people in Harlem. And, you know, Trump's team choreographed it. And this has been the running theme with Democrats. It's like, oh, no, it's all pre-planned. And, you know, he's just pandering or whatever they want to say. You can say that. But what Democrats should be worried about is that even if the people in Harlem are the exception, that the Trump supporters in Harlem are the exception, there's probably a lot of black voters out there who, even if they don't pick up a MAGA hat, they're definitely not checking a box for Joe Biden. And that's enough. That's enough for Trump to change the course of this election. The other thing I'd add in, and we talked about this yesterday, Jared, and you weren't here, and I'm curious about your opinion on it. Or maybe it was the day before. Maybe I kind of think you were here when we talked about younger people and how I had asked my sister, you know, do the people your age realize that all of the things that they were hyperventilating about when Trump was president?
Yeah, I think that was Monday.
In perspective, like in relation to what's going on now with this perspective of time, do your friends realize that things weren't that bad? And we kind of put out the possibility of, well, no, because in a lot of people's minds, even if they have the perspective now of world wars and inflation and an open border, in their minds, what they saw as the threat of Orange Man was their reality. And they still do believe that. And I wanted to read you something from The Federalist, because I thought this summed it up better than I could. Can you believe that? The Federalist? Mark Hemingway got it right? It says, in any event, as news broke that Iran was launching a barrage of missiles at Israel this past weekend, one might reach the conclusion that, yes, presidents who create actual chaos are a bad thing. The problem is that America's political class has its head so sunk into its posterior that it can't begin to be honest about what real chaos looks like. And he quotes a Twitter account that wrote, most of what the media is referring to when they describe the Trump presidency as chaotic were things like tweets, personnel changes, and Russiagate leaks. Now the whole world is on fire, and they're still behaving like going back to that would be catastrophic. That's how I see it. I'm like, we keep looking at a certain group of voters and going, and when I say that, I mean like the white wine drinking Wellesley ladies at the book clubs. And I keep looking at that group and going, look at this. This is real chaos. Are you still upset about mean tweets? But you know what the problem is? They are. In their minds, they're still right. They still did the right thing. This chaos right now, higher bills, an open border, people getting pushed into the subway, still to them, in their minds, is better than the mean tweets.
And they're in their own reality of like we said, you know, their reality that they've created to prove that they were right. There are still people out there. They're legitimately think that all of the high prices of groceries is due to supply chains that were disrupted during the pandemic. And that's the only reason. They really believe that the pandemic and the supply chain issue is still the only thing causing inflation of groceries.
Yeah, they really do believe that he's a victim of circumstance. None of this was his fault. These things just happened to him, as opposed to when it's Trump, everything. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if somebody's toilet gets clogged. It somehow relates back to Donald Trump. Thanks a lot, Trump. This is Trump's America. And Jared's right. And when you have these things that are directly due to Joe Biden's policies, and in some cases directly due to the fact that Joe Biden reversed all of Trump's policies that were working, that's not Biden's fault. That's just, that's all Trump. You know what is something I never thought I'd say? I can't wait for my next dentist appointment. Well, hear me out. The team at Perfect Smiles makes everything perfect. From teeth cleanings to total smile transformations, they have you covered. The state-of-the-art equipment and the dedicated experts at Perfect Smiles will deliver the smile of your dreams. Another thing that you'll love about visiting Perfect Smiles, Dr. Houghton listens to you. You are part of the process. Dr. Houghton wants to give you a smile that you want and that you're proud of. He and his team will walk you through every step of the process at your own pace. The end result, the smile of your dreams. It's easy to put yourself at the bottom of your to-do list. Don't wait. Get the ball rolling and give Perfect Smiles a call. They're located in Nashua. It's easy to get to. If you're near Nashua, great. If you're not, trust me, it's worth the drive. Don't trust just anyone with your smile. It's too important. Trust the team at Perfect Smiles. Go to PerfectSmiles.com. That's PerfectSmiles.com. Change your smile. Change your life. We'll take your calls on all things election, the Trump trial, the jurors. I have an update for you from Mark Salinas. I didn't read that whole text that he sent me. And actually, there is a little bit of a caveat there. So we'll go back to that after the break. 844-500-4242. We'll be right back.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. This is The Grace Curley Show.
They come in with guns, and he's not allowed to have a gun, okay? That's not good. Not the father of this star. He's going to be a movie star, you know that. He's going to forget about bodegas. You're going to be the movie star. We'll send him to Hollywood. Goodbye, everybody.
What's your plan?
It really is when he's at his best, is when he's just riffing with people and when he's having fun and when he's, you know, meeting with Americans. And that, I think, is really the hardest part for the media and the left in general, but I repeat myself, to grasp. They've never been able to understand that. They've never been able to understand how this billionaire from New York is able to connect with people. And I think a big part of his connection is he doesn't try to pretend that
he grew up in the Greek community.
Yeah, he doesn't try. Exactly, Jared. He doesn't try to be this chameleon and say, oh, I've lived this life. I've lived that life. I'm just like you. I have the same experience, except for mine's more interesting. Let me tell you about it. Instead, he embraces the fact that he embraces his own life, his own unique experience of working with businesses and, you know, being on TV and, you know, having celebrity friends and then having them turn on him. And he takes all of that and he makes it work. But he's not trying to pretend to be somebody he's not. And so there's a lot of people who hate him, but they don't question his authenticity. They don't question that what he's saying, he believes. You might believe he's nuts, but he believes it. And I think with Joe Biden right now, we have the exact opposite. And that's why it's so brilliant that Trump is taking advantage of every single thing that Joe Biden cannot do right now. He cannot ad lib. He cannot talk to people. He cannot relate to people. He cannot talk to the media. So Trump is going to hammer that like he would take a hammer to the Constitution. As that celebrity, what was her name, Jared? She was from the show Grown-ish?
No, she was from Blackish. I don't remember, but she knows what mental illness looks like.
I know what mental illness looks like!
Yeah, that lady. She told me that Trump's going to take a hammer to the Constitution. He's hammering everything right now. By the way, we talked about the challenges for the jurors, and I said he could challenge as many as he wants. He gets 10 preemptory challenges where he doesn't have to explain why he doesn't like a jury, he just wants them off. He gets 10 of those, which Mark Salinas told me is a lot. I'll be right back.